Welcome, boys and girls. Thank you for tuning in. It's great to have you with us here today. My name is Henrik Palmgren. This is Red Ice TV. We have, of course, a video version available of this interview. But if you prefer, we also have the standard radio version, if you will, available for you guys. RedIce.tv is the main website. Also, check out RedIceMembers.com for the the fan website, as it were, our dedicated fans and supporters who can get a membership with us. Our guest today is Hagen Grell. He's actually out of Germany, and it's one of the first German guests we've had. We have a couple of people from Germany before, but it's been very difficult to tap into the kind of topics that we cover, the concerns that we have. It's difficult to peer into Germany from this perspective. Don't know why. I think it's a language barrier. We could get into this later too. But it's great to have you with us, Hagen. Thank you so much for taking the time being here. And thank you for coming on, doing the work you're doing.
Yeah, thanks for having me. And thanks for getting in touch. It's great to have like the barriers broken by talking to each other.
Exactly. Definitely. Now, for those who don't know about you, tell us about your work, how you got into these kinds of topics, and what kind of work that it is that you're doing today.
Yeah, basically, I started as an activist in Germany because I was a computer scientist, a programmer. I did websites and stuff for small companies and just minding my own business. And then the Ukraine conflict came along, and we all like gathered on the street. We gathered on the streets, and there were a lot of people, a lot of activists protesting that. And that was the first time when I got a taste of what it means to be mischaracterized. You know, all of the people we met there were like normal German citizens, like from the from children to pensioners and normal people, and they were labeled Nazis. And that was the first time when I got in contact with the media or the media mischaracterization. And I dove into it and dove more into the topics, which were not only censorship, but also the politics behind it, the aggression politics, which are supported by the German government, international politics, and also like conspiracy theories and stuff. And that's when I decided I couldn't be like working full time and then taking the time off and making some videos. I had to do it full time, and that developed over time. I started doing it full time in 2015. And since then, I've built my YouTube channel. I have 30,000 subscribers now, and covering topics, political topics, philosophical topics, especially anti-social justice topics, but also topics that are like diving into the history and diving where it all came from, right? And like trying to build up a new, I'd say my vision is kind of a hero nation again, because so many Germans have been like pussified, I'd say. They've become really weak, and I grew up like that too. And so I can really relate, but my concern is that we can't go on like that, because otherwise we'll be annihilated that way or another. I mean, like if people don't have children anymore, and that's like a normal opinion that people have right now, then that's the end of it. So that's why I'm doing this.
Very good. I'm glad you're doing it full time, that you've been able to establish it in that way. That's just awesome. Your English is very good as well. Do you think that's one of the main reasons why we don't communicate between our countries? To me, it feels like Germany still has a border around it, if you know what I'm saying. It's more of a mental border in a sense, because as we know, the borders are wide open, but it's very difficult to communicate with people. It's very difficult to get into the political system from the outside. Is that just a language barrier, or is there something else going on, would you say?
I think that's one and foremost a language barrier too. That's what you're getting at, because I'm doing translations of videos which are very popular, like from Paul Joseph Watson or Rebel Media sometimes, or like videos I find in English, and I translate them and like do it with overdubbing and with subtitles. And people are really thankful for it, because the older generations usually don't have a good English skills, so they can't understand it. And that's one thing. The other thing is that I think people have traditionally, the left, for example, has an anti-American stance because of the wars. So they something that you perceive as an enemy, you wouldn't learn the language, except you want to make something out of it. But most people have been like really, or it has been enough to be able to communicate in German, and they weren't interested in other topics or international topics really much. So it's a little bit isolationist, you might say, and on the other hand, a little bit ignorant. Yeah.
Interesting. Okay, let's just talk about the big picture right now in Germany of what the climate is like, what is like politically, what kind of parties you have, and also, of course, how things that you address, how you are perceived. I mean, we have a huge free speech issue in Germany. Many European countries, frankly, Sweden is suffering from this as well. It's more of a repressive climate in the media, really. It's not as common that they go and literally imprison people for, you know, hate speech or things that are critical of the, you know, the globalists and the elites and everything else. But how are things in Germany right now? If someone doesn't know much about it, peering in from the outside, what would you like them to know about how things are in Germany?
Okay, maybe the first thing is about the parties. You ask about the parties which are present in Germany. And I would say, and that's just my personal characterization, but that's why I'm doing what I'm doing. To me, it seems like you have all these parties which basically are on the... You know, if you have a spectrum, like from left to right, I don't usually use that spectrum, but in this case, it's appropriate. If you have a spectrum from left to right, and you have like really left, then the center, right, and really right, then all of the parties, all of the standard establishment parties would be in the left or very left sectors. That's how I perceive it, because they all have like social justice topics or climate topics, but not really climate topics in a feasible or economically feasible way, but climate topics to put the burden of regulation on other people, so to speak. Then you have the CDU, which is the Christian Democratic Party, which was conservative. But under Angela Merkel, who is basically who grew up in a socialist system in the GDR and was like in the youth organizations and had a political career there, it really shifted to the left and is basically a center-left party at the moment too. So the only party which is in the middle or a little bit right is the AfD. And all of those parties are like pretending they're in the middle and they're great, and the AfD is like an extremist right party. But if you have the complete spectrum, then the AfD basically is just a center or a center right party. So that's the situation how I perceive it. And these parties, they have the establishment parties have some differences regarding some policy points. But when they are talking about the core points, which are the social state, or some may call it even socialist state policies, more regulation, more putting the burden on small entrepreneurs and stuff, then they're all basically the same. And also regarding immigration, which is a really, really big really, really big point for the AfD in the upcoming election, because they're basically the only party which are slightly, or some people in the AfD more aggressively anti-immigration or anti-borderless and limitless immigration. So that's one thing. And the other thing you touched on was the censorship, and that's basically the people who are in power, the establishment, seem to have no interest in hearing other opinions or letting other opinions be spoken. So with Justice Minister, which is the Minister of Justice, of the law, how do you say justice? I think justice,
yeah,
minister.
Yeah.
He is like having a campaign where he just started to censor Facebook, where he has like an NGO, Amadeo Antonio Stiftung, which is run by a former Stasi member or agent too. And other attacks on the freedom of speech, which are very horrendous.
What you're talking about is obviously the very repressive environment of you know, free speech, and the fact that you really can't go against the grain. And we've been struggling with this in Sweden for years. It's coming to many other countries in the West too. America is getting it now. It's the question of whether or not, you know, you criticize immigration or open borders, is that hate speech, basically? Are there people that have ended up in jail in Germany for questioning these kinds of things? Or how is it there with the climate? I mean, is it that the police come and like break in your door and haul you away? I've heard some of those stories, but I don't know if it's true or not. Maybe you can confirm some of those.
Okay, that the police is breaking into your door, it depends really on the situation. But let me first say the Justice Minister, the Minister of Justice, Heiko Maas, bragged about it on German television and a talk show. And he said that he's glad that some people are going to jail now for 2 years for hate speech. That's what he said on, I think, Anne Will talk show. He said that. So he's glad for doing that. And obviously, there are some people who are getting that. At least he's trying to persuade people not to do it. And on the other hand, I have a contact to lawyers who are working on those cases. And it's sometimes really crazy because you have to imagine a lot of these lawyers and judges, they don't know the new technology. So when they have a platform where people can anonymously accuse other people of hate speech, and those people make a screenshot and they deliver it to the police and they can't even be asked about it later. So that's really crazy because it can't be proven. And a lot of times those cases end up nowhere because there's no accuser, there's no real evidence. You can falsify that really easily. So it might be fake. So that's the situation. And some people have suffered because they it was being confirmed and they got like a small fine, or some went to prison for a short time. And the really hard cases where the police breaks into your door, that's sometimes about the resilient people. You have to do for that kind of treatment, you have to be like the first warning, the second warning, then you don't come to court, and then they break into your house. But I haven't heard from cases where they straight up went to the house and got you. Still, that's a terrible example they're setting. And if that's in the law, it can't be really understood by the judges and the lawyers. It's terrible, stupid, and sets a really terrible precedent.
Now, I don't know how much you know about the alt-right in America or even the new right in Europe and so forth that's rising. And much of that comes intellectually out of the French movement, the identitarian movement. Is there any correlating movement in Germany right now? I guess you would be part of it, really.
Yeah, I'd say there's also an identitarian movement which is getting stronger in Germany and in Austria. I have contacts to Austria. There's a guy, Martin Sellner, who is doing that in Austria, who's very prominent, but also other people who are forming a coalition, so to speak. And it's really about not just finding the identity in the case of the people, but also in the case of the movement, because you have some identitarians and some conservatives or new conservatives, and you know, like some magazines like Compact, for example, which is also alternative media, but let's say middle center right, for example, and then you have center left alternative media, and many of them are, or many of us are really in. I have really the same opinions on many topics, and some not on the immigration part. But it's really difficult to say we are one movement because it has been so such a long time that we've been divided in groups. And you know, the anti-church movement or the anti, let's say the 68 movement. How are they called? Baby boomer movement. Mm-hmm. That's the 68er here. So the 68. From 1968 people, and so there has been a lot of division, and it's difficult for people to come together, but it's slowly growing, and that's what we're seeing at the moment.
Is there any unifying force? I mean, is the AFP, the Alternative für Deutschland, is that a viable party in your view? I mean, if just look at what the policies they're implementing. I've heard many people say, yes, it's great, it's a start, but in no way whatsoever are they, how do I put it, radical enough to combat the seriousness and the urgency of the situation in Germany. Do you agree with that?
Basically, that's why I said it's center-right. Basically, I'd say that the alternative for Germany is the only alternative, really, but they're not really extreme. There are some people in it, like Björn Höcke, who said, or who had a speech, and he said that we are the only people who put a how do you say, a monument of the how do you say, Schande, like the guilt, monument of guilt, let's say monument of guilt, into our main city, so mm-hmm. into our capital. And he was talking about the monument for the Jews, for the Holocaust in Berlin, which is really an ugly monument. It's just like blocks of asphalt and something like that, you know, yeah. this terrible modern art. So, but he said that, and he said he meant that we should look for positive role models in the past, and we should be a people which have positive role models, and we should model our society from the positive role models in the past, and not from the terrible deeds which happened in the past, so to speak. And the press and his own party were on him. They were trying to destroy him. The press said, oh yeah, he's a Holocaust denier. How could he say that? Well, it is terrible. And really like forcefully or willingly misunderstood what he was saying, and like trying to twist it in a different way that it really mischaracterized him again. And unfortunately, some of his party members our colleagues said that, yeah, we can't keep him in the party, and try to shut him out, which wouldn't have been necessary because it was already forgotten in the public eye. And some people like Frauke Petri or Anis Weidel tried to get him out of the party. And this procedure is still on the way, and but it doesn't have so much. Or shouldn't be, or won't be, probably won't be fully, or he won't be expelled from the party. I think that is. So the AfD, I'd say they have a lot of problems and are not really radical in the way that they're saying, like, for example, we're identitarian, we want that. But they are radical in that sense that they have like a common sense approach to most of the topics that the radical left, like lunatics, so to speak, have, for example, like the gender idiocracy, like we say Frühsexualisierung, which means when you have children and they're teaching them in kindergarten how to be sexual and stuff
right.
like that.
Yeah.
Right. And some family politics. So that's combating that, but they're not really extreme.
Yeah, there's so many facets to what the left has done to transform our society. As you say, it's not only the immigration issue, it's the over-the-top feminism, it's promoting transgenderism to small kids, it's the feminization of men, it's the SJW issues of, you know, safe spaces and everything. And I think you're right in your initial premise that you said that it's basically turning men into pussies. It's turning, you know, women into men in some regards, and it's all backwards, you know. And there's so many things that are happening that are, it's almost like that you don't know where to start. But what I feel partially is that, you know, if we don't have the demographics, we don't have anything at all. I'm very concerned with immigration because it's just such a, I mean, if you look 2, 3, 4 generations ahead, if we are going to be minorities in our own countries, there's nothing we'll be able to do from there, right? And if the majority of those people are, let's say they're Muslims or whatever, I mean, they will begin to transform the law. It will turn into their territory. It will turn into Sharia court, Sharia law, whatever. And we will just be probably treated in the most awful way you can imagine within these societies. How is the demographic situation in Germany right now? And let's get into the immigration issue. I mean, the last couple of years, borders have been wide open. Merkel encouraged all these people to come in. What is it like? What is happening in Germany right now?
So basically in Germany, you have different areas which are affected differently. For example, you have like the western areas and especially the larger cities, which are affected very terribly because you already have a lot of foreigners, a lot of Muslims, which are not really integrated. And that's the problem. They're not even integrated, but assimilated. That would be like if you really become German, if you identify. But you have a lot of Turks, for example, who feel like they're Turks and all of their loyalty is to Turkey, and especially with the new Erdogan Turkey, which they're loyal to. And in a lot of cities, there's the problem of refugees, so to speak, or asylum seekers who have been denied asylum, but they haven't been they haven't been shipped out of the country or flown out of the country.
Yeah.
So they're still in and they're tolerated. And then there's a law loophole, which is when you're long enough in a country and the state hasn't put you out or shipped you out of the country, then you can stay.
Yeah.
So that's a problem. And also there's a problem that the racist angle, they're taunting the policemen with, is a problem because they won't have a strong force against criminals which are not German, because they're afraid that they'd be labeled racist and be fired from their jobs. So that's a really big problem. And as you say, from the demographics part, we're still, I think, we have 20% foreigners in Germany, if I remember correctly. But in the relevant age group, which is from like fighting age, from 18 to 35, we have like 6 million or so Germans. And as much foreigners or as much refugees.
50-50 at that point?
50-50 at that
wow.
point.
That's amazing.
And that age demographic.
And then couple that with the trend so far, right? I mean, younger couples and so forth. Are they having any kids in Germany? I think Germany is the below replacement level. They're the lowest on that scale, so to speak, than any other country right now.
Yeah, I can't even say it because the numbers are skewed from the government. Because are foreign births are they calculated in that or not? That's the question. But I see some German couples in the cities or in my direct proximity that are having kids. So I can't really say because I don't have the numbers. But from the feeling standpoint here, it's really like they're having very little kids and they don't want to. And as you said before, feminism not even only has made men to women, or men being women and being unattractive that way to women, but also women to men. And it's really anti-children, because if you read, and that's a really terrible thing, if you read women's magazines, I did that for a talk show where I talked to a neuroscientist and a healing practitioner, and we got like women's magazines or mothers' magazines, and there were articles in it like "Mom, you stink, but I still love you," or "How hard it is to have children, and they take so much time." So it's really a propaganda war. And on the other hand, if you see, for example, Erdogan. He said to his followers a while ago, "You'll never be Germans." He was in Germany and said, "You'll never be Germans. You'll always be Turks, and you should have 3 kids." And recently, he said, "You should have not 3 kids, but 5 kids." So that's really a bold move, and really saying, "In my taste, I'm trying to conquer Europe."
Yeah, it is. That's what's so amazing with it. I mean, tell us a bit about the German-Turkey relationship, because a lot of Turks has emigrated into Germany. They came, of course, as guest workers. When was that? Was that 70s or 80s? When did a lot of Turks start showing up?
I think it was, I looked it up recently, I think it was 63 to 69 where the first wave came, and it mm-hmm. was 1 million Turks, which came about a little bit less. Which came to Germany supposedly to help build up Germany, which was built up at that time again. So the hard work was done by the Germans before, and now we have some people who are saying, the Turks built up Germany, which is absolutely ridiculous. But you can
right.
yeah, but you can tell some people believe that in today's Germany. So that's the terrible part about it. And otherwise, there have been, of course, like it's always the case, some great people come from Turkey, which now feel like Germans. They feel like Germans themselves, and they have assimilated, and they'd say some of them really like to hire Germans and not Turks, for example, more because the Germans are reliable and they want to have a reliable business, so they hire Germans. So that's some sort of stories I heard. But on the other hand, you have a lot of Turks who live from social welfare, who hate Germany, or let's say they love Turkey and they love Erdogan Turkey, and they want like to establish something Turkish in Germany. And they have the feeling that Germany belongs to them. And you have like people who was, what was the name? I don't remember the name, but it was a father from an organization, parents, Turkey in Berlin, Turkish parents in Berlin or something like that. And also for integration, it was also an integration organization he was working on. And he said, because Germany was the Bundestag, which is the German parliament, was talking about, no, they were having the resolution that the Armenian genocide, that was the case, and that was that you should be reminded of that, right? And the Turkish, the current Turkish government says there was no Armenian genocide, mm-hmm. and that's terrible. So that guy, the father I was talking about, said the Germans are a Köterrasse, which means like a dog's race, or how to say a defamative word for dog.
Yeah, like a mutt race or something, right?
Yeah, something like that, right? Yeah. Right.
Wow.
So that's what he was saying, and yeah, he didn't get much as much heat as for example Björn Höcke from the AfD, which he was talking about before, and he was even the attorney general in that region weren't even saying no, we're not following that case because the Germans are not really a specific group, a minority, and that kind of hate speech is just applying, or hate speech laws is just applying to minority groups, and as the Germans are not the minority, then it isn't applied, and we're not even prosecuting them.
You know, we have similar things in Sweden too, where we actually, we don't really exist as a group, you know. we can't be protected under these minority laws, you know. But the funny thing with it is, I think even if and when we become, I don't think it's going to get to that, to be honest. I think we're going to fight back. But let's assume hypothetically that we were to become a minority in our own country, we would never be protected under those same rules. They would still push white supremacy or racism and all these kinds of things. And it's just absurd. I mean, it's absolutely absurd. But I mean, granted, there are far more Germans than there are Swedes, for example. But still, in comparison, if we compare our countries to many of these other countries where people are coming from, we are, globally speaking, a minority. We're a very, you know, unique people. We have unique traits if you compare it to the rest of the world. And you think from a point of view of diversity, that these groups would be encouraged, right, to continue and to exist as a people. But that doesn't seem to be in the cards at all, right?
No, because also you mentioned the diversity, and there's a word in German, bunt, they're saying bunt, like colorful, which is like also applied to diversity. And there's a good anti-meme which says if you like put all the colors together, you get a brown or a grayish nothing, right?
Right.
Because and that's like a strong argument for having borders and protection for each of those groups. And as you said, that doesn't seem to be the case for whites. And we have to say white because I was talking about it with a historian lately who like observed all of these double standards. And if you like put all of these double standards together and talking about, for example, birth control, and like, we have to have all of those peoples, where are the birth control pills or programs in Afghanistan, where the Bundeswehr, our military, is for such a long time, and they're building up schools there. And if birth control is such a strong human right and such a strong topic, right, that they're so concerned about, why don't have the Afghanian people access to birth control?
Yeah, and abortion, right? And everything.
And there's a lot of topic, abortion, right. Yeah. Abortion and free speech. That's also like if a white person says something, then that's, you have to be careful. You have to be politically correct. But if you come from another country, okay, that's your culture. You can say everything. You want to stone a woman to death, or want to talk about it, or want to talk about how you kill all of the infidels. Okay, that's fine, right?
Yeah.
So that's not about talking just the same. Not talking about the normal law enforcement, but talking about the politicians. They're really like that crazy in Germany.
Yeah, they are. Let me actually play a clip for you. And I'm sure you've already seen it, obviously, but let's play it for the viewers anyway. This is Gregory Gysi from the Linke, the left party in Germany. Check this out, guys.
Meine Damen und Herren, Ich rufe Sie auf an der Demonstration Schöner Leben ohne Nazis, Vielfalt ist unsere Zukunft am 6. Juni in Neuruppin um 10 Uhr teilzunehmen. Wir müssen uns gegen die Nazis stellen. Schon aufgrund unserer Geschichte zwischen 1933 und 1945 sind wir verpflichtet, Flüchtlinge anständig zu behandeln. Außerdem muss deren Leben gerettet werden im Mittelmeer. Und es muss einen legalen Weg geben, um in Europa Asyl zu beantragen. Auch Länder wie Polen, sehr katholisch übrigens, müssen bereit sein, Flüchtlinge aufzunehmen. Und dann gibt es ja noch was. Jedes Jahr sterben mehr Deutsche, als geboren werden. Das liegt zum Glück daran, dass die Nazis sich auch nicht besonders vervielfältigen. Und schon deshalb sind wir auf Zuwanderer aus anderen Ländern angewiesen. Bis zum 6. Juni.
All right, so this guy, is this considered a radical position in Germany? Was he, I didn't hear anything afterwards of whether or not he was attacked for these comments, or was he let off, so to speak?
No, that's what I was talking about. That's really the basic notion that the political left, which is all establishment parties, that all establishment parties really stand behind. They wouldn't all say it like that, but it's like it said, okay, Germany loses a lot of people because they're not really having as many children. They are, we have such a terrible past, and that's why we have to do all the time, like thousand years into the future, we have to like be guilty and do everything to make it good again and stuff. So that's really nothing new. I'd say we have talked about it, and some people covered it in the alternative media, but in the mainstream media, it wasn't talked about, and it really wasn't a problem.
Yeah, so, I mean, he's basically also calling all Germans Nazis in this case, which shows to me what he really feels about the German people. I mean, he's happened to be Jewish himself, so maybe he doesn't relate to the German people, maybe he doesn't feel as one with them, but this to me, you know, brings in a different thing into the picture, where he basically says that, all right, it's great that these people are not having any kids because they will be bred out of existence, just that it's a guilt that's so hard, you know, ingrained in the people there, that therefore their ancestors, even people today that have nothing to do with what happened 70 years ago, are worthy of being bred out of existence. I mean, this is genocide. I can't view it any other way. What do you feel when you watch something like this?
Yeah, I'm about those things. I'm really a little bit numb to it right now because I've said to myself, I've identified the problem, and I'm working with it. Just clarifying about what he said, he not really said like all Germans. He said that also the Nazis are not breeding, so all Germans are not breeding as much, and the Nazis too. So we can be glad that the Nazis won't be as many as in the future. Still. You have to say that this is quite anti-Germany, because like he doesn't care about it, and he doesn't care about the future of Germany. And I'm numb to it also because there are people who are really saying much stronger things, and it's also in a very in a way which is like bold. Really, really bold. Like, for example, Lamia Kadour, who is a religious scholar or an Islam scholar, who, by the way, trained some people and tried to get them back from ISIS. And some of her students right went back to ISIS after her courses, so that she didn't have to seem very successful. And she went on German television and said, yeah, we have to accept that in the future to be German will be that you can have black hair and you can be Islamic and you can wear a burqa, and that's all German. And we can't accept that in the future this means you're white or blonde or have blue hair, but it's really super, super diverse. And Angela Merkel, for example, said for 1 month ago or something like that, she said that, and this is really ridiculous, because she said in the first sentence, there are some small groups who think that they can define who's the people in Germany, and that's crazy. The people in Germany, or the German people, is everyone who lives in Germany.
Yeah, right.
So first she says there are some small fringe groups who say that, and then she herself, who is part of some crazy small group, says the German people is everyone who lives in this country.
Yeah.
Yeah. How ridiculous is that?
Yeah, we have in Sweden, we have a term, they call them newcomers, or recently arrived, which kind of implies that everyone is already Swedish, whether they even are not in Sweden yet. You know what I mean? When they arrive on Swedish soil, ta-da, they're Swedish, right?
How that works.
This is crazy. It's absurd.
You don't even have like some standards for it, right? You don't have to believe that there's secularity, that there's like a separation of church and state, or in the freedom of speech. You're just Swedish or German if you come over the border, right?
Yep, that's right. Exactly. You don't have to have any values or anything like that. And let's not even get into the racial aspect or genetic aspect of this at all. It's like that they're trying to gaslight us, as the expression is. They're trying to hypnotize us. It's almost like a magic trick that we don't exist as a people. And even if you did, you're so bad that you're worthy of replacement, basically.
Yeah, that's true. And you can see it like in for example, in the United States, there's the slavery. I think in Germany, okay, there's the Nazi future. I think in Germany, Canada, or Sweden, there's our wealth somehow. That's a problem, right? And like the colonial past in Britain. But there's also always something different. But if you look closely at the groups who are like portraying violence, for example, like Antifa, then they're really in all of those countries, like organized by the same people or funded by George Soros or some other groups funded by George Soros or other people in that area. And you really have to ask yourself, are these all franchises for the same goal?
Right, exactly. That's very interesting. Let's get into that a bit later, the deeper political aspect of this. I wanted to play a couple more clips. One that came out was two younger German girls speaking just randomly on the street. Check this out.
Nee, wir haben alle keine Lust, wir haben alle Angst.
Wir denken von 100 Jahren.
Es ist trotzdem nicht mehr. Da kann man mal sehen, wie viele wir hier schon drin haben von diesen Leuten. Und jetzt sind 1,5 Millionen dazugekommen. Jedes Jahr kommen 2 bis 3 Millionen.
Es geht allgemein über die Überfremdung.
Ja, Überfremdung.
Ja, ja. Wir werden nicht mehr so rumlaufen.
Ja, it goes on from there. But it's, I mean, it's amazing. You know, what kind of future are the European leaders, the Merkels, the Tony Blairs, the Camerons, all the politicians in France, etc. What kind of future are they creating for, mm-hmm. Our children? I mean, this is, I don't think we can even fully comprehend what it is that is happening here and the consequences of this. What do you feel?
That's one part I want to say before I answer the question. I want to say something different about the clip we just saw. Something remarkable about that is that if you're a German citizen, especially if you're, it depends on your opinions. If you're a German citizen who is anti-immigration or who wants to pro free speech and who wants to do a demonstration, a protest, then it's really difficult to have like freedom to walk around. And then there's a lot of barriers which the officials try to put in your way. And if you're like, obviously, if you're like an Islamic group, then you can do everything. Like you can walk through the streets, you can like be very loud. I didn't see any police really there in that clip. So that wouldn't be the case if they were German. So there's a double standard again. And regarding your second question about the future that the political leaders are trying to achieve, you just have to look at their documents, for example. There was a document, I don't really remember how it was called, but it was the agenda for 2050, which Angela Merkel herself really pushed on a party convention, I think. And there was said that in 2050, there will be no German majority anymore, or so no white majority, that anyone, basically anyone, will have a German, an immigration background, so to speak. Mm-hmm. So that's a crazy thing. The second thing is that there are like institutes which are monitoring the development of the populations, which say that we have a drastic reduction, which is not explained by the birth rates. So maybe they're knowing something, that there's other plans, for example, removing people or something like that to other regions, or that they're anticipating war or civil war, something like that. And then there's the EU officials, and the EU has a strong influence on Germany. Basically, the German government at this point approves so many policies and puts them into German law from the EU that you could say Germany is basically an EU member country, so to speak, or a member state, if you had like the United States of Europe, so to speak. And those European officials, they're having the plan, like, for example, this one I think it's even a commissioner, so one of the highest officials from Greece, Dimitri Avramopoulos or something like that. Mm-hmm. And he wants to have 70 million immigrants in the next 20 years or so. 70 million to Europe. And if you watch like the development of the nations in Africa, for example, Nigeria, where you have like a growth of over 2.5% every year, which means that they're doubling in 25 or 30 years or so, and they're at 200 million at the moment, then you can calculate what that means, where they're all coming from, and yep. What that means for Europe.
Yeah, it's insanity. I wonder how. I wonder what is going to happen here. At some point, I think either we as Europeans will simply just walk off the stage of history, where we just quietly, you know, disappear and fade out, I guess, to a certain extent. Now, I don't think that is going to happen. I think what we're witnessing now with the Le Pens and the Brexits and these kinds of things is an initial little expression of us basically being sick and tired and fed up with this. How do you see the next few 4 or 5 years or so, both of the EU, but also of your own country? I mean, we have, as I said, we have Le Pen now. If she does manage to get in, I hope she will be able to put a referendum on the EU membership for France to the people, basically, of France. That could actually make or break the EU, in my opinion. I mean, otherwise, if France pull out, it will be, Germany will be at the helm of it, obviously, as an economic powerhouse. With a lot of other satellite states, if you will. But do you think the EU can survive if France bails out?
Yeah, I don't really think that the EU could survive. And there are also a lot of anti-EU movements in Austria, I know that, and in Germany too. A lot of people are sick and tired of it. And they don't buy the lies that the EU is like funding everything, because the people are finally getting to the point that they realize that's their own money taken by the government, being given to the EU and then given back to them. So people are getting around that, and the EU like have so many terrible policies and regulations which are really tying small businesses. You have to really be tough to survive as a small business owner in Germany at the moment, and they're making it tougher and tougher. So people are getting sick of it, and that's not only in France. Even if France doesn't go out as fast, I think the EU is on their way to decline, and that's really a great thing. As you said, we're basically, as I see the situation, we're really struggling to survive, and we're in that situation where we have to have the greatest comeback of all time, so to speak, to rescue what was like a couple of thousand year culture which developed, yeah. Right? So it's ridiculous when you think about it. There were so many ancestors who fought for it, who built this structure, who built the system, who accomplished so many great things, and these new social justice warrior brainwashed youth. They're throwing it all away and don't even have children. Like, oh yeah, it was a great time and we built so many great things and now I'm here to continue that, but fuck it all. I'm just being lazy and giving it all away.
Yeah.
And in an Islamic Europe with that kind of Islam we have at the moment wouldn't be nearly as technologically advanced. And it won't be if we have that ideology. It won't be. So no. I'm looking forward to our comeback, and that's the thing I'm fighting for too.
Yeah, exactly. I agree with you. I think it's they don't even know what they're getting themselves into. They don't know how good they've had it. They've not fought for anything. They've not struggled for everything. They've been handed everything. And partially, maybe that's part of the problem. I mean, whether we like it or not, we are now facing one of the greatest challenges that we've ever faced, I think. Because there's so many variables to it. And I think that we are forced to step up to the plate, so to speak, and really push back against this and organize politically and just better ourselves as individuals. And I think we're going to pull out of it, Hagen. I mean, I think I'm at the end of the day, I'm positive, but I think it's very important to continue to, you know, almost shake people into a wake them up basically with this picture of the scary picture of reality right now. Because if we don't manage to wake up these people, then we are screwed. You know, we do need more people on our side, so to speak, that actually understand what it is that's happening and the dire consequences of the situation. And you know, as you said, one of the problems I've been trying to convey to a lot of people too is this aspect that, like, don't you understand that, like, a Europe without us is going to turn everything into shambles? I mean, it's if we're not there to, you know, we, for example, just look at how much aid we give to other countries, how much we do, after all, help to stabilize certain countries or give them or help them out, all this stuff. If we go, as far as I see, the rest will go with us. You know, it's just how it is. What do you think?
Yeah, and some leftists would say, "Ah, oh, you're so arrogant, and all people are the same, and stuff like that." But
why didn't they make their countries into ours then? Right? I mean, if you understand this, but just for the sake of the argument here, it's like if they had all these opportunities to do what we have done, why haven't they done it? Right?
Yeah, because we were suppressing them.
Always, exactly. Even before we always arrived, you know, yeah.
Yeah. Mentally, like with telepathic sorcerers or something like that.
Right.
Right. No, but as you said, the struggle is really a great struggle, but it's also a really great opportunity. I see it in myself, in my own development. I basically was raised by the school system and by the media, so to speak. My parents worked a lot, like many parents here. So this was a main influence by me. And I'd say I was a socialist, a feminist, and we call it Gutmensch, which is like kind of a social justice warrior, or at least someone who identifies with these things. And I wouldn't have, if it was not for that really strong struggle we're in, I wouldn't have developed the way I have right now, and I'm still on my development, getting stronger, getting better in certain areas, and that's really a development we all have to do. And I have a picture where I'd say, if you walk through life and you're like regarded all the other people look normal, for example, and you walk like the your life, and you're like a fed blob, so to speak, and you walk your life, and then at some time you realize that that's just a part of you which is visible, and that's why you're looking strange. Actually, you're like the little toe of a giant, and just that little toe is visible because that's only the part they let you develop in school, for example, right? So if you really put that to work and look at yourself, develop yourself, get the people around you to develop with you, you can really become that giant. And if you become that giant, then so many things are possible. For example, just if there was that political will, and maybe there will be soon, is that political will to solve that asylum crisis, then with the current technology, there's no problem to get those people back to their countries, even to give them a little bit of money to go back and start something there, to really have a sensible policy to make those countries great, or help those people make those countries great. There's really no problem. And we have the technology, and there's really no such problem as was before in the past. So if we get to that point, then the concrete solving of the problem is just in a matter of months.
I agree. Exactly. I've said that too, that it's like, you know, all that's lacking is the political will, the drive, and to give people the idea that it's possible, right? And also to plant this idea in people's heads that, listen, I mean, just look at the situation right now in Europe. Has things gotten better? Right? Is it generally better? Right? Is it all worth it with the terrorism, with the constant fighting and bickering back and forth, and not every interaction, but many interactions between these various different groups and different interests now in Europe? Every little interaction is over racism or a power struggle, over, you know, oh, he's a little bit lighter and he was getting this, and, you know, it's, everything is just turning into this nonsense. You know, it doesn't mean that we have to be enemies with these people, you know, if and when they go back to their countries. But the point is, a multicultural society seems to lead to authoritarianism, seems to lead to extremism and all these kinds of things. And that's what we want to try to avoid. We don't want a violent situation. None of us want that, right? I mean, so it is about getting these people back to their country where they belong, to have them in a situation where they feel that they're at home, they're with their own people. And as you say, I think, I mean, even from a leftist point of view, I've always said, but wait a minute, isn't it unfair that those people who are maybe the best educated or those who have money, they leave to go to the West and leave their own people in the squalor, right? Shouldn't they be in their own countries and helping out their own people instead, right?
Yeah, and there's policies even to keep those people there and don't let them get back. For example, at the protest I was some weeks ago, there I by coincidence I interviewed a refugee, and he said, yeah, where are you from? Afghanistan. Okay, didn't see really seem like a refugee, but doesn't matter. And he told me, okay, I understand that these people are anti-Merkel. And I get it. Yes, Merkel got some people into the country, but and so I like Merkel, but sometimes I hate Merkel too, because she doesn't let some people back into their countries, right? So that's a problem too. The policy seems to be they want to, doesn't matter the cost, they want to settle a lot of people who don't belong here from the same for themselves, right? Don't belong here, settle them here. So it's basically putting people who don't want to be here to permanently into Germany and like force them to be here and in Europe generally, right?
Exactly.
And if you look, for example, into Great Britain, there I heard that there was a study where you have like Muslim communities which have been like really isolationist, so to speak. And those communities, some of them, if you ask them, there have been surveys. If you ask them, some of them believe that Britain is Muslim. Right? Because they're so isolated.
That's all they see. That's all they experience.
Yeah, that's all they see. I know. Experience, right? Yeah. And that's really, if we wait longer, those people get accustomed to this ridiculous state where they don't see the full picture. They just see like a small picture, all of us. Not just for example, those Muslims I mentioned. And you have those no-go areas and such things. And nobody is happy with it. And you can't really say that someone has really the security with it. Not those people in those no-go areas, because if they go outside, they have problems. Not the German people. It's a terrible people, which is a terrible policy, which is bad for everyone, except for, I don't know, the people who profit, the asylum industry, how we say sometimes.
Yeah, exactly. And the genocidal maniacs in power. And we'll talk more about that in the second segment. I want to ask you more about the future of Merkel and what's happening there now. I mean, she even admitted back in 2010 that multiculturalism has failed. You know, we'll play that clip later. But nothing was done of it, of course. But Hagen, please tell us about your YouTube channel, how people can support you. Obviously, you're targeting the German, you know, audience, so to speak, obviously. Maybe we have some people from Germany that doesn't know about you yet. I hope we can bring some people your way, of course. But tell us about, you know, how often do you release videos, and do you have a show, or is it just more individual videos? And also let us know how people can support your work, because we need more people like you in Germany doing the work you're doing.
Thank you very much. Yes, my YouTube channel is I Protest Blog, or Hagen Grell. You find me about that. And my website is hagengrell.de. But which is more important to me, if you want to find me, you can find me there. There our contact is contact data. But what is more important to me is what I see in our interview, that we have to get together across borders, across the people of Europe and really of the world who want to like end these terrible policies. So I encourage everyone who like wants to talk to me and like have a discussion about that, or like wants to get in touch with me and has ideas about how we can interact, talk to me. Otherwise, I have a PayPal account, and I'm opening a community soon for all German listeners. Please get in touch stay tuned for announcements who come that way soon.
Excellent. Very good. Well, we're going to take just a short break here, ladies and gentlemen, and then we'll continue more in the second segment with Hagen. Much more I want to ask him about, much more we need to discuss about the situation, both in Germany, but also, you know, the future of the EU and how we can fight, what we should do, and these kinds of things. So a lot more coming up. If you want to check out the second segment to this, please go to redeyesmembers.com. There you can get a membership with us, and that's the best way to support us as well. Help us keep us independent and ad-free and all that good stuff. So definitely check that out. But yeah, so stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen. Much more coming up with Hagen. We'll talk to you after a short break.